KQED.
From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Coming up next on Forum, we take up the debate on legalizing the industrial cultivation of hemp and industrial hemp farming in California. Over 30 industrialized nations grow industrial hemp, and many export it to the United States, where growing it is illegal. Because of a bill co-sponsored by San Francisco Democratic Assemblyman Mark Leno and Orange County Republican Assemblyman Chuck DeVore, that may soon no longer be the case in California. Forum is next, with your calls and emails right after this. From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Michael Krasny. Good morning and welcome to this morning's forum. A bipartisan bill, Assembly Bill 684, put forward in the California Assembly by Democrat San Francisco Mark Lennon and Orange County Republican Chuck DeVore, would regulate commercial industrial hemp farming in California and revise the definition of marijuana in the California Health and Safety Code to exclude industrial hemp. Industrial hemp and marijuana are different varieties of the same species, and both contain THC, though that hallucinogenic substance is 3 to 15% in marijuana and less than 1%, actually about 0.03 in industrial hemp. Narcotic enforcement officials have generally been opposed to the growth of industrial hemp because of what they argue is the difficulty of discerning legal hemp from illegal marijuana in drug busts. Though hemp, a variety of cannabis, grows much taller than marijuana and resembles bamboo. Industrialized hemp, presently mostly imported in the United States from some 30 countries that allow its cultivation, is used for food, clothing, automotive parts, body care products, building materials, and paper. In fact, the Declaration of Independence is printed on paper made from hemp. In this forum hour, we want to look at the Leno-DeVore legislation and take up the ongoing debate over the farming of hemp. And let me tell you who is joining us for the hour. We want to welcome here in studio Patrick Doggan, who is California Council of Hemp Industries Association member, and they are all for voting for hemp, and we welcome you. Good morning.
Thank you, Michael. Good to be here.
Good to have you here, and also good to have John Lubel, who is legal counsel for the California Narcotics Officers Association, and he joins us this morning from the state capitol in Sacramento. Welcome, John Lubel.
It's John Lovell, but yes, I'm here from Sacramento.
John
Thank you.
Lovell.
Good to be here.
Good to have you here, and good to pronounce your name correctly. Also want to go to Mark Leno in Sacramento, state assemblyman from the 13th District of California, who co-authored this bill, and welcome Assemblyman Leno.
Good morning, Michael. Great to be back.
Good to have you back. And let me begin, Mark, with getting you to outline this bill for us. I guess there was one that went down in defeat, 1147, that was pretty similar, but we have some differences here. Tell us about that and tell us why you think this one's going to go through.
Well, first of all, you laid this out very clearly for us, but I just want to further make the point that if I were to tell you that we are currently manufacturing thousands of products from a crop that grows without herbicides, fungicides, pesticides, needs less water, that we can make from this crop food, clothing, shelter, paper, fuel, all biodegradable products, renewable every 90 days. The 30 of our trading partners are growing it. It's only illegal when it's growing in the ground. You'd scratch your head and wonder, what is this craziness about? But we find ourselves in this anomalous situation where we're forcing, in the midst of a trade imbalance crisis, our manufacturers to send their dollars abroad to import a plant that we're not allowing our farmers to grow. So it's a very simple bill. It will allow California farmers to grow industrial hemp. It'll be good for family farmers. It'll be very good for the environment. It'll be great for the economy. It's a win-win-win all around. So we needed to narrow the bill this year to move it forward through committee, and I think actually the way we've got it written now in its limited project form, four counties would move forward with production: Kings County, Imperial, Mendocino, and Yolo counties. And then with the additional law enforcement provisions we put in it to attend to the concerns that those such as Mr. Lovell have addressed, we believe we've got a much better bill than we had last year, which the governor vetoed. So we're feeling very confident.
Well, I think one of the points we'll probably hear from Mr. Lovell and others who are against this bill is the uncertainty of the long-run demand for hemp products and the potential for oversupply. There's a discounting of the prospects of this as an economic viable crop for farmers.
Well, it certainly is. We have a county supervisor from Kings County who's also an economist and also a cotton farmer. He's run the numbers, and he, as a family farmer, would love to rotate it with his cotton. It's also a great rotational crop. It leaves nutrients in the soil. So I'd take it from him. But nonetheless, since when did we decide that we want our government to come in and dictate to our farmers what a good crop for them is to grow and what is not? In fact, it's a nearly $300 million industry growing at 10% a year. 100,000 acres in Europe next year, or by the end of this decade, will be planted with industrial hemp for one specific use, and that is to manufacture the inner panels for automobiles. There are already millions of automobiles with hemp panels on the insides of their car, replacing fiberglass.
Talking with Assemblyman Mark Leno, who is co-author of a bill that would change the present laws where industrial hemp farming is concerned, do you think, Mark Leno, that those who are concerned about narcotics enforcement are going to have problems because of this, the problem being distinguishing hemp from marijuana and doing the kind of drug enforcement that seems to comply with federal laws as they are presently?
I want to be respectful of the opposition arguments, but I really don't believe that there's going to be a problem. 30 other countries have managed to work this out, Michael, and we have not heard any kind of horror stories. And again, just to the naked eye, very different plants. Marijuana grows very broadly, so rows are planted about 4 feet apart. As you mentioned, industrial hemp is planted very densely, which is why it's a smother crop, needs no herbicides, and grows in rows just 6 inches apart and grows to 20 feet tall.
So my producer, excuse me, is asking you to define what a smother crop is. Could you do that?
Because it grows so densely, no sun can get into it or build anything that grows at its base, which is, again, why no one would plant marijuana in a field of hemp, because marijuana takes about 4 to 5 months to mature. The industrial hemp, just 3 months. And also, it would get smothered. It could not grow underneath the hemp. Also, the cross-pollination makes sure that hemp farmers, as well as marijuana farmers, want to stay far away from each other as possible, because it would destroy each other's crop. I know I've got limited time with you, Michael. I just want to put a good word in for my colleague, Assemblyman Chuck DeVore from Orange County. We describe ourselves as pre-postpartisan. We got together 2 years ago on this bill, working across the aisle. He is a Republican conservative. I, as a Democrat from San Francisco, and we both see the wisdom in this, and he's been a great assistance in are moving this forward.
Yeah, Assembly DeVore actually will be joining us after the half hour.
Great.
We're going to talk with him as well. One of the interns here at Forum said, Chuck DeVore, he's in favor of nuclear power, and he's also in favor of hemp. as you say, I think properly characterize him, he is a conservative Republican. And that brings me to John LaBelle, legal counsel for the California Narcotics Officers Association. This has bipartisan support, John LaBelle, but it also seems pretty clear that Assemblyman Leno disagrees with you as far as, well, I guess your position is that it is very difficult to distinguish marijuana.
Well, let's just say that we disagree with each other.
Respectfully disagree.
Yes, absolutely, absolutely. I have enormous respect for Mr. Leno, but we do disagree on this issue. First of all, a couple of things. Hemp is illegal under federal law. Even if this bill passes, hemp will be illegal under federal law. One of the kind of distressing things about this bill is that its real impact is going to be merely to enable a private organization, the Vote Hemp People, to use the legislation to sue the federal government in an effort to overturn federal law. I mean, put another way, suppose you had a bill in a state that would have enabled in Texas. Suppose you had a bill in Texas that would have enabled Enron to sue the SEC. It's just very troubling that the legislature is looking at introducing legislation to enable a private entity to sue. It is outright illegal under federal law. The Vote Hemp People themselves have been quoted in news releases when they praised Congressman Paul for introducing his federal legislation that hemp is illegal under state law. Secondly, with respect to the similarities between hemp and marijuana. Mr. Leno is correct in this sense. Where you have a legitimate hemp farmer who is growing hemp for lawful purposes, that hemp can be grown in very large stalks. And I'll come back to that in a second, because that creates a different set of problems. But a sophisticated marijuana grower can grow hemp so that it looks exactly like marijuana. You don't grow it as an industrial hemp. You don't plant it in rows. You plant it wildly, just like marijuana. And if there's any doubt about that, I'd ask the listeners to go to Google and hit images, and then hit hemp, and then hit marijuana, and just look at a representative group of pictures, and you'll see that there's it's impossible to tell the difference. With respect to the stalks, this creates a problem that we just found out about yesterday. According to AgWest Bio, Inc., which is a Canadian agricultural publication, the way you dispose of hemp stalks, because they're very, very durable, you can't grind them into back into the soil. They can even snarl farm machinery. The way you do it is you burn them. And I'm reading from the AgWest Bio report in November 2005. Since hemp residues have little economic value, farmers are left with little choice but to burn the residue before planting new crops the following year. This releases large amounts of carbon dioxide into the atmosphere and contributes to Canada's greenhouse gas emissions. Finally, the notion that this is a viable economic product is simply not borne out by the facts. If you look at the acreage in Europe, over the last several years, there's been a 61% decline in acreage in Europe. In Canada, there has been a 70% decline in hemp acreage in the last several years. And even in China, the largest producer of hemp in the world, there's been a significant decline in hemp acreage. This is hardly indicative of a crop that is that has a wonderful economic future. Because hemp and marijuana look exactly alike, law enforcement efforts at going after these large criminal marijuana combines, the folks who grow these large growths, is going to be severely compromised in the four pilot counties, or as one of my narcotic officers refers to them as the four victim counties. In those counties, law enforcement will not be able to rely on visual and aerial surveillance as they currently do. Instead, they'll have to test hemp products. They'll have to test the plants to be sure about the THC content. Now, the difficulty with that is that currently the state of California does not even own the testing equipment necessary to do that. Those equipment costs $100,000 a piece, and we don't own the instrumentation. So law enforcement efforts will be severely compromised. It appears...
Forgive me for asking, though, Mr. LaBelle, but is this because marijuana can be camouflaged with hemp, essentially?
Yes, and the way you camouflage it is that you grow female hemp cuttings with female marijuana cuttings, so you don't have a cross-pollination issue. And in fact, this problem has occurred in Canada in at least a couple of instances.
But in Canada, they have safeguards. Hemp growers have to register, they have to get a license.
Yes, that's one other point of this bill, even with the Canadian safeguards. But this bill does not have those safeguards. In Canada, for example, hemp growth is a yearly license. The person has to undergo criminal background checks, and the hemp grower must indicate the GPS coordinates. AB 684 merely states that hemp is an agricultural field product. Well, that doesn't regulate in any sense where it's grown. Tomatoes are an agricultural field product, and I've got a wonderful plot of tomatoes in my backyard. That mere statement has nothing to do with where it can be grown.
Again, we're talking with John LaBelle, legal counsel for the California Narcotics Officers Association, and Patrick Doggins here in studio. He's with the California Counsel for the Hemp Industries Association, Vote Hemp. Real motive of the bill, we hear from Mr. LaBelle, Patrick Doggins, is to sue the federal government.
Well, right now what we have is a situation where the DEA is asserting jurisdiction over industrial hemp when Congress never intended for the DEA to, that's the Drug Enforcement Administration, to regulate industrial hemp. And their approach to regulating is entirely unreasonable. The only crop that they've actually allowed to be licensed since 1970 was a three-quarter acre crop in Hawaii that they required $750,000 of security measures be placed in there, and then their delays in bureaucratic red tape ended up killing the project. What we're trying to do is to assert state rights when a federal agency is overstepping its bounds.
But you run into the same problem that in the case of Ed Rosenthal, for example, who was trying to assert rights here in California, and marijuana advocates have been trying to assert rights here in California, medical marijuana use and so forth, then there's the federal law.
Yeah, well, in 2005, the Supreme Court ruled in the Raich case that any time you withhold marijuana from the national market, even if you're not spending money or on purchasing the marijuana, or you are growing it yourself, you're still pulling from the national market and having some sort of impact on the price of the black market marijuana. Here, we're not under AB 684, we are not in conflict with federal law, and there is no impact on interstate commerce but for those parts of the plants that have already been held to be fully legal under federal law, and that is the sterilized seed, the fiber, and the oil.
But you would like to use it as a vehicle to go after the federal law, I presume. I mean, that's fair to say. That
we're not actually attacking the federal law. What we're saying is we're not in conflict with the federal law and that these laws can coexist.
What about the other arguments we heard? What about, for example, the stocks and greenhouse gases that we heard from Mr. LaBelle?
Well, he actually provides a good argument that we ought to be looking into. We ought to free up this plant so that we can look into energy sources, potential energy sources for the plant. John does a good job of citing the possibility that we could be gasifying the stocks and powering turbines and getting lots of energy. In addition, the stocks are filled with cellulose, and we could be exploring and putting much more research and development into employing that cellulose for cellulosic ethanol.
I also heard from Mr. LaBelle that there has been a decline in the acreage, that in fact, Mark Leno, I think the phrase he used, not on air here, but the phrase he used about this bill would be it would bring California an economic bonanza, and then we hear a decline in acreage in Canada and China and Europe.
Well, you know, Mr. Lovell is often fuzzy on the facts. Last year, the truth of the matter is that 48,000 acres were grown, of industrial hemp were grown. The largest market for Canada's seed oil is the United States, and in fact the seed oil food and body care market is on the rise, and to argue to the contrary is misinformed.
I also hear the hemp advocates talk about hemp seeds as being nutritious, and hemp fibers, of course, not only being used for fabric and paper, but protection against weeds and helping recondition the soil. There are a lot of claims about what hemp can do.
Yeah, well, hemp actually, as Mr. Leno referred to earlier, it's a wonderful smother crop. Not only is it good for smothering the weeds that are beneath the hemp plant, in fact, the roots dig very deeply into the soil and help to bring back nutrients to the soil. That's why it's used as a rotation crop. With regards to the nutritional value of the seed oil, it actually provides an optimal source for omega-3s and 6s, which are what we need to get these from our food. We are often relying on fish oils. We know the problems with fish oils. And in fact, getting the more proper ratio of the omega-3s to 6s is an important nutritional fact that really needs to be looked at, and hemp is a very good source for that.
But does growing hemp make it more difficult to distinguish from marijuana and make marijuana hidden from drug enforcement officers? That's really the key question here, I think, in many ways, as far as the law is concerned.
Well, under this law, a couple of parts of the law that weren't noted earlier is that this year we've actually required that there be a 5-acre minimum. And as Mr. Lovell reported earlier, that it must be grown within an agricultural field crop or research setting. So any marijuana, any cannabis plants for that matter, that are grown outside of these settings and under these minimums requirements are presumed to be marijuana under the law. It's clearly written into the bill that there can be no hemp defense. Any flowering tops that are removed from the field of cultivation are presumed to be marijuana. And somebody who is possessing something that might look like what is more commonly referred to as a bud, and is approached by a police officer, cannot claim that it is hemp.
How does the 5-acre minimum rule strike you, John LaBelle?
Well, it's certainly an improvement on the bill, but I think that the point is that these major criminal combines who are growing marijuana are growing in far greater amounts of marijuana, so the camouflage could still be used. I don't know if any of you saw the CNN special this weekend, but major marijuana grows. It's no longer your 60 stoner who's growing marijuana at this level. It is major crime combines that have come in and are engaged in this process. And surely they're sophisticated enough to deal with that. A couple of other points that I wanted to comment on. With respect to the greenhouse effect on burning of hemp, according to EPA, when you burn hemp stalks, you go through several phases. In the gas phase of the burning, you're emitting carbon monoxide, carbon dioxide, and benzene, which are kind of nasty substances. In the particulate phase, you're emitting benzopyrene, and this is from the EPA. You simply can't harness the stalks for energy purposes right now. There's only one hemp processing plant in North America. It's up in Manitoba. There's an effort to it's in Ontario. There's an effort to build one in Manitoba, but they have yet to obtain financing. And again, if this were such a hot crop, getting financing would not be a difficult task. And finally, I think you heard the answer to the question about, is this bill designed to set up a lawsuit? The answer is yes.
Well, we're coming up on our break here, and I want to give out the phone number and invite those of you listening to join us in this discussion about legalization of cultivation of hemp for industrial purposes in California. We welcome your calls. You can join us toll-free, 866-733-6786. Lines available to you. Again, that toll-free number, whether you're listening to us on radio, internet, or a Sirius satellite, open to you, 866-733-6786, or you can send an email to us with any questions or comments you might have. Our email address is forum@kqed.org. Patrick Doggan with us in studios with Vote Hemp, and John LaBelle is with the California Narcotics Officers Association. We spoke earlier with Assemblyman Mark Leno. We'll also speak later on with Assemblyman Chuck DeVore, who is the bipartisan companion of Assemblyman Leno on this bill. I'm Michael Krasny. You're listening to Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. We're discussing Assembly Bill 684, which was put together by Mark Leno, state assemblyman here in San Francisco. And co-author on that is Republican Assemblyman Chuck DeVore of the 70th District of California down in Orange County. It would legalize the cultivation of hemp for industrial purposes in California. I wanted to get, before we go to your calls and emails, I wanted to get Assemblyman DeVore on here to hear why he's partnered up with Assemblyman Leno. I don't know that that's an odd partnership, but certainly by some people's standards, Mark Leno himself said, you know, I'm Mark Leno, and you know what my politics are, and Chuck DeVore is a Republican and a conservative, and Assemblyman DeVore, good to have you here. Welcome.
Well, thanks for having me.
Let us know what your raison d'etre is behind this bill.
Well, for me, it was a very natural partnership because I'm all about the public policy issues and not so much about the personalities. And when Mark Leno originally came to me with this idea more than a year ago, what I was immediately intrigued by was that all of the products that industrial hemp is made into are perfectly legal. And furthermore, industrial hemp is legally imported from over 30 nations, including Canada, China, and much of the European Union. And as I looked at it, to me it was an issue of liberty and freedom for our American farmers. The fact that foreign farmers can compete and we can import their products and we won't let our own farmers grow this harmless non-drug product just struck me as spectacularly silly from a public policy standpoint. And I thought that just out of fairness alone, we needed to allow our farmers to be able to grow industrial hemp. And furthermore, in countries like China, which have very draconian drug laws, if they've been able to figure out that industrial hemp is vastly different from a drug-bearing marijuana, then you would think that we here in America could figure that out as well.
We're hearing, however, from John LaBelle and others in the narcotics officers world that it is very difficult to distinguish between hemp and marijuana.
Well, I've had a number of conversations with Mr. Lovell, and what I have decided, and I've actually mentioned on the floor of the assembly when we were arguing this bill, is that will this make things a little more difficult for law enforcement? Yeah, probably will. However, 7 of the 10 of the Bill of Rights have to do with making things a little more difficult for law enforcement. We live in a democratic republic founded on the principles of liberty and freedom. We don't live in a police state. The police exist to serve us, not the other way around. And if it's going to be a little bit more difficult for people to distinguish illegal marijuana and hemp, then perhaps that's one of the prices we pay for freedom and liberty. But the fact is, the people growing illegal marijuana are not doing so on fields they own themselves. They're typically growing the illegal product on public lands like national forests. And they do it there because of the asset forfeiture laws, so that if you find someone growing an illicit grove, if it's private property, you can seize that property if it's proven that the owner knew what was going on. And so if you look at that, and if you look at our bill, if a California farmer grows industrial hemp, registers the field through GPS coordinates, reports that their field is producing industrial hemp to the local authorities, which we have in the bill, then if that same farmer makes the error of trying to grow illegal marijuana, completely aside from the fact that it's very difficult to grow the two crops side by side for a lot of horticultural reasons, but assuming that they were, if Mr. Lovell's clients in the Narcotics Officers Association found that illicit field, then that farmer loses their field. It'll be confiscated through asset forfeiture laws. So I truly doubt that California farmers are going to use this bill to start growing illegal marijuana because they'll have their fields put at risk.
And what about the conflict with federal law?
Well, the conflict with federal law appears to be somewhat cloudy, and it's somewhat cloudy because of that Ninth Circuit court ruling that was not appealed to the U.S. Supreme Court that allowed for the importation of industrial hemp from overseas to begin with. And if the Ninth Circuit Court made its ruling saying, look, industrial hemp is not a Class 1 narcotic, it has no drug qualities in it, therefore you cannot prohibit its importation, then by the same token, that gives us the opportunity to challenge and clarify federal law using the federalist process, which is one of the geniuses of the way we've organized our nation, where you've got basically 50 public policy experiments called states that can get out there and innovate. Now, North Dakota is already ahead of us in this game. I'm sad to say that the entire state of North Dakota has less people in it than my assembly district. and a Republican lawmaker with some 30,000 acres of wheat and barley, as I recall, was the main sponsor of the hemp bill in North Dakota. And what he reasoned was that just north of him, over the border in Canada, they're growing hemp, and that he would like to be able to compete with those Canadian farmers. And so it may very well be that North Dakota is going to be ahead of us in this queue of trying to clarify and challenge this overbroad federal policy that fails to make a distinction between an illegal crop that is used for recreational drug purposes and a legal industrial crop that is used to make auto parts and food supplements and shampoos and lotions, etc.
Chuck DeVore, Republican State Assembly from Orange County, joining us this morning from Sacramento and co-author of the bill that we've been discussing, Assembly Bill 684. Thank you for joining us, Assemblyman.
Well, thank you.
Glad to have you aboard, and we're going to get our callers aboard. And just a moment, I wanted to give John LaBelle an opportunity, though, to respond, but particularly to the drug enforcement points that were made by Assemblyman DeVore, that maybe it's going to be a bit more difficult, but look what they're doing in China, where they're tough as hell on drug enforcement.
Well, a couple of things there. First of all, the Chinese example is not on point, because China's a communist country where they can they simply run the hemp operations in a totally regulated, virtually armed guard environment, and no one would suggest that something like that be done in the United States of America. But it's more than just inconvenience. This will fundamentally compromise our efforts at enforcement of these major drug combines, which, by the way, also do grow their product on private property. We just took down one at a vineyard in the Central Valley not too long ago. But because you're going to have to test for THC content, and because those testing instrumentalities are not generally available, law enforcement efforts at enforcement against major criminal combines with respect to marijuana will be severely compromised. Moreover, let me give you one other example. Let's say that I am growing marijuana on my private property, and you, Mr. Krasny, are a police officer, and you come to me and you say, John, you're growing marijuana, I'm going to bust you. And I say, no, I'm not, I'm growing hemp. To which you say, well, let me on your land so that I can get some of the product and test it. And I say, no, I'm not going to. I'm growing hemp. You have no probable cause to come on my land. So what you could be setting up, and several lawyers have suggested that this could be a problem, is a situation where you cannot get a search warrant to go on to any marijuana growth property, because the property owner will merely assert that it's hemp. Because they look exactly alike, there would be no probable cause. Now, that's not a universal view, but several lawyers and one judge has told me that that could be a significant problem.
All right, before I go to callers and emails, I want to go back to Patrick Goggin. We've heard a good deal from Mr. LaBelle about drug combines and about the fact that chemical testing is really the only way to go here, and it's generally not available in California. And now the argument of no probable cause and assertion that it's hemp by private landowners. And there are a lot of points there, I realize. That's a kind of a whole combine of points. But I'd like to hear what you have to say, Patrick Goggin.
Well, the most important fact that has been missing from Mr. LaBelle's arguments is that the bill requires a farmer who's farming industrial hemp before harvest to have an agent of a DEA a lab registered with the DEA to come to the property and to pull samples from that crop to ensure that it comports with the less than 0.3% THC requirement, and the farmer must retain that report for 2 years. So if a police officer is coming to the farmer's property, suspects that it's marijuana, all he has to do, he doesn't even have to come on the property, all he has to do is ask the farmer to produce the test report. If the farmer cannot produce the test report, then the farmer's got a problem. The test report, in addition, is required to put on there the minimum acreage of the crop and the GPS coordinates so that you could easily tell whether or not this is industrial hemp under the bill.
Let's go to our callers. And Tony, you're up.
Could I respond to that first?
Yeah, if you could quickly, General.
Yeah, very, very quickly. First of all, the requirement for testing is at any time prior to harvest. And so in the hypothetical I gave you, the person would simply say, well, I haven't done my testing yet. Secondly, according to the Western States Laboratory for DEA, there are no, repeat, no DEA-certified labs capable of quantitating hemp and marijuana.
I don't want to get bogged down in this, but Patrick Goggin says that your first statement was untrue.
Yeah, the bill requires that the samples be taken at a certain point in the growth cycle, and it is just untrue. There are five labs, private labs in the state that have DEA registrations to do this testing.
Not according to the Western States Lab of DEA.
Well, let us go to our callers, and Tony, you're up first here. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you. I'm wondering if it wouldn't be at all possible for both parties to set up maybe a trial period for growing hemp for already established agricultural farmers here in California, farmers that have been growing crops of agricultural products for years and are licensed and what have you, to set up some kind of trial period for a certain amount of those farmers to have hemp grown on their lands to, study the market effects of it, and B, maybe give the law enforcement portion a little more time to come up with better methods of distinguishing the hemp from marijuana, so that if the time ever comes that it becomes available to all farmers in California, that it's easier for the law enforcement to distinguish between the two. And I'll take my answer off the air.
All right, Tony, thank you for that. Wasn't there a feasibility study on the agronomic and economic studies with respect to hemp back in 1999? Wasn't there, Patrick Goggin?
There have been a number of studies done. One in particular was done by Purdue University that found that, in fact, this is just an incredibly versatile crop and with a lot of potential and a lot of opportunity in multiple areas of our economy. But responding to the caller, this bill has been, along with being narrowed down to four counties, it is now a five-year pilot program. So it basically it sunsets in 5 years.
That's what he's saying. He would like to do. In other words, it's an experimental program. You're saying
exactly. And we worked closely with Republican Senator Denham in the Senate Agricultural Committee to narrow it down to basically give this bill a chance and to see if the law enforcement concerns bear themselves out. And that's why he particularly chose Mendocino County.
Let me go to more of your calls. Miles joining us from the city. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. I tuned into the show a little bit late, and I don't know whether you covered this at all. But my guess is that there are more vegans in California than anywhere else. And we have limited sources of protein. And many of us feel that we're getting too much protein from soy. And I personally have switched to a number of hemp-based products. I also bodybuild regularly and have tried to find alternatives to soy protein and have found that in hemp.
Well, it's true that hemp has protein. I mean, there's no denying that. You know.
I would very much like it if the hemp milk that I buy in Rainbow Market didn't cost a dollar more per container than the soy milk that I buy.
Well, and it costs a dollar more, you're implying, because it has to be imported. The hemp has to be imported.
Because it has to be imported, and there's less acreage devoted to it.
Yeah. Okay, I thank you for the call. That call speaks for itself. We'll get some more calls on here. Gabrielle, good morning.
Hi. I just would like to echo exactly what the caller before me said and just make a comment to the law enforcement officer. Why not challenge the federal law when you have other countries around the world growing and supplying this product? I also am a lifelong vegetarian. I was born and raised and way dependent on soy. Soy was not adequately providing me with any protein, and I obviously, as a vegetarian, can't take fish oil either. So It provides me a wonderful source of protein. It provides omegas, and it's a shame that our archaic puritanical laws in society are keeping us from incorporating this crop as we've incorporated cotton, as we've incorporated soy and corn. There's no reason why we can't work out the law enforcement issues to protect, you know, the DEA so they can do their job to fight marijuana. But there's very distinct differences between marijuana and hemp. And if we put a little bit of effort into investigating how to distinguish the two, we wouldn't be having those problems. So I say go ahead, challenge the federal law. I think it's archaic and it's puritanical and it's not good for our society.
We thank you for the call. I want to get a response from John LaBelle, but maybe I can dovetail a couple of emails here along the similar lines and get an overall response from you, Mr. LaBelle. This is Phil who says, it's ridiculous we're importing a perfectly good domestic crop from China. This whole worry about narcotics seems overblown. I'd like to know from the enforcement officer, actually Mr. LaBelle is legal counsel for the California Narcotics Officers Association, but how he really feels about enforcing marijuana law. Wouldn't his job be a whole lot easier if it were legalized? The organized crime element would evaporate if people who like to smoke it could just grow it themselves. And then we have Matt who says, hemp is illegal because it resembles another plant. Do we outlaw hanging out on the stoop because it looks like drug dealing? We should prohibit by law as few things as possible, not everything we can think of. In other words, we're hearing from listeners who really feel that maybe the law ought to be challenged.
Well, and that's certainly a legitimate point of view. But if the law ought to be challenged, then let the state of California bring a challenge seeking declaratory relief. Let's not have special interest legislation permitting a private entity, giving them the vehicle to sue. That would be, as I said earlier, analogous to the state of Texas passing securities laws to enable Enron to overturn the SEC regulations.
There's actually nothing to inhibit the Attorney General once a complaint for declaratory judgment is filed from joining the lawsuit.
Let me read another email along argumentative lines from Robert, who says the debate and discussion of this bill cannot be an effective truth-finding exercise because of the absurd, pointless, counterproductive prohibition against marijuana production and use by individuals, nor can the debate be objective because of the underlying conflict between those who champion the individual's right to use pot and those who oppose the growth and use of hemp because they so desperately want to uphold their profitable job-creating efforts to curtail the behavior of individuals as it suits them to do so. If Americans were not subjected to these oppressive laws against individual choice, this argument would be entirely moot. Let me go to more of your calls, and we go to Doug in Berkeley. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to address one point about the global warming argument, just in that it's sort of a minor, well, not a minor correction, a pretty major correction, because the argument is pretty specious, because unlike the CO2 that comes out of your car, the CO2 that may come out of burning hemp has already come out of the atmosphere, so the net impact is zero. And if you just take those stocks and bury them, then it actually helps with global warming. And I also, but as a kind of follow-up question for you all, I was curious if you could speak a little bit to the overall environmental impact of processing hemp and creating paper and creating, say, fabric as opposed to using cotton or wood fiber.
Well, we'll go to the second point to Patrick Goggin because he's an advocate, but I'd like to get your John Lovell on the record here as far as what you said about the speciousness of the argument where global warming is concerned. John Lovell?
Well, I'm quoting from AgWest Bio, which is a Canadian agricultural publication, and they have no interest in this.
They don't have an axe to grind.
Exactly.
Yeah. But what about burying the stalks, as the caller said?
Well, the problem is that it's so durable and tough that burying them is not economically feasible. Because understand, again, these are stocks that are so tough they can snarl farm machinery for years afterwards. And again, that's also from AgWest Bio, from their discussion of the issue.
And the environmental argument, Patrick Goggin, where hemp is concerned?
Well, hemp does not require the use of herbicides or pesticides. It does require some fertilizer. So there's a great impact and great benefit from not having these chemicals running off into our waters. But in addition, as far as fiber is concerned, hemp is known to grow at a very rapid rate, producing fibers for paper, wood production that grow. There have been studies that show that it grow at a rate that's something like 4 to 1 compared to wood.
Here's an argument from a different point of view. This is from Don, who writes, if California farmers think there's a market for hemp, they should be able to grow it. My concern, however, is that the law enforcement provisions of the law will be ignored or not enforced in practice the same way the law enforcement concerns around medical marijuana are being ignored. Want to hear a horror story? Take a look at medical marijuana in Oakland. That's from a listener named Don, and we're going to go to a listener now in Boise, Idaho. Brian, join us. You're on the air. Good morning.
Thank you. First, I'd just like to comment the argument between the state and federal right is pretty interesting. I appreciate that. My question was, rope comes to mind, something, you know, like a nylon rope or something is made using a petroleum product. I wonder how much of, you know, how many products maybe hemp could replace, you know, that are made using petroleum products or directly made from petroleum products.
Patrick Coggan.
Well, there was a book that was done, written by a fellow by the name of Jack Herer, The Emperor Wears No Clothes, and he asserted that there were some, you know, 1,000 uses, if not more than that, for that hemp could replace various products, and amongst those, a number of them are petroleum-based products, including actually plastics. And the car parts that have been referred to, the biocomposites that would be used in door panels, for example, would be replacing fiberglass.
Here's another argument for hemp that we hear from time to time. This comes from a listener in Mill Valley, who says, many years ago, I read a history of U.S. economy focused on the years it was primarily an agricultural economy. It told the story of hemp as an almost magical and absolutely necessary product, which we used for fuel, lamp oil, rope, paper, some food products, clothing, and the list went on and on. The unmentioned part of the history is the fact that one of our presidents decided that it would benefit the country to use the forests and the U.S. Forest Service for making paper instead of hemp, hence making money for the government. We didn't need to stop using or growing hemp at all. I don't know about that history, Patrick Goggin. Is that accurate? As written here?
Well, yeah, there were, I mean, I don't know about specifically going back to the time of creating national forests and whatnot, but it was mandated, or I'm not sure whether it was even a mandate, but during the war, there was a campaign called the Hemp for Victory campaign, where hundreds of thousands of acres.
Which war are we talking about?
World War II.
Okay.
Were planted to use the fiber for ropes and sails and such.
And more, yeah. I'm sorry, Mr. LaBelle, you wanted
to? Yeah, I just wanted to say, a lot of this discussion about all of the various uses of hemp kind of remind me of the old patent medicine salesman who used to go through the Old West, you know, and sell high papalorum or low papahiram and, you know, talk about all of its benefits. The fact remains...
Snake oil salesman.
Exactly. The fact remains that in Europe right now, where it's been legal, where there are markets, there has been a 61% decline in acreage. In Canada, yes, there are 48,000 acres currently planted to hemp, down from 100,000. In China, which is the largest producer of hemp in the world, there are currently only 227,000 acres of hemp grown in China. And these are from government figures in each of those areas. So the fact remains is there may have been a history of hemp, but technology and economics of producing other products has long passed that by.
And on we go. Carl, thanks for waiting. You're joining us on Forum. Good morning.
Good morning. The idea that that a smokable pot grower would put his plants in the middle of a field of industrial hemp is just nonsense. The pollen would dilute the exotic strain of the smoking pot and would also introduce seeds into the mix. It'd be like buying really purebred high quality breed animals and letting them run with mongrels.
Not when you plant both to female plants. Then it works completely, and that was the experience with law enforcement in
which
Canada.
Is a completely impracticable reality.
Actually, not true at all.
We're going to have to move on here with that disagreement.
Sure, of course.
We'll get on to more of your calls. Larry, joining us. Hi, Larry.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. I guess one gentleman already said what I was going to say. Hemp was made in the rope, hemp was made in the fiber, and all that was from the stock. So this argument that the stock can't be handled is sort of mute if you turn it into products that we can use. Popular Science, I believe, this month had an article on cloth made from hemp where it was no longer scratchy. It was nice and smooth. And, excuse me, if you make hemp rope again, then yes, you're deleting the petroleum use of the making of rope for everything else we do right now.
Okay. I don't know if any of you want to comment, Ms. LaBelle or Patrick Goggin, but we've actually come to the end of the hour here, and I'm looking at an email from a listener named Anthony who says, why does the state leave it up to the voters of California instead of putting it through the whole legislature? Interesting point. There's also a listener who wants to know if anybody has ties to the cotton industry, but we'll assume that is not the case.
Not the case.
And I want to thank both of you for being with us this whole hour. Patrick Goggin, again, is with the California Council for the Hemp Industries Association, Vote Hemp, and John LaBelle is legal counsel for the California Narcotics Officers Association, and he joined us from Sacramento. Also, our thanks to the two assemblymen who are sponsoring this bill, which is Assembly Bill 684, Chuck DeVore, Republican State Assemblyman from Orange County, and Mark Leno, State Assemblyman here in San Francisco, District 13th. The co-authors of, again, Assembly Bill 684. Thanks to our guests and thanks to you, our listeners. We are appreciative of your listenership, and we're here with you Monday through Friday, 9 to 11, and an hour is repeated. And the 10 p.m. slot on KQED, we're going to come back in another hour and talk to you in the hour ahead all about small local theaters and find out how they sustain themselves and how they make do and what kind of performances they have to offer. We're, again, reminding you of the fact that you can let us know about what you think you hear on forum, what you like on forum, what you don't like, suggestions, recommendations. Email us forum at kqed.org or call 415-553-3300. Thanks to our producers, Robin Giannatasio-Mal, Kevin Guillory, and Dan Zoll, who is now joining us and welcoming him as new producer and senior editor of forum. I want to also extend thanks to our production assistants, Sarah Skickney and Tina Lauerberg, our engineer, Danny Bringer, and our executive producer, Raul Ramirez. I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Claude and Louise Rosenberg Jr. Family Foundation.